Greetings, dear humans, and whomever else is listening in. It has been a while since my last podcast conversation. And, you know, I really do enjoy doing this, but after 10 years, I just felt like I needed a break, especially after the stress of all of us being manipulated by the dark powers that be during the last 4 or 5 years. You know, I was inspired. This is something I've started researching, getting into, using for myself and clients. I don't know, maybe 6, 8 months ago. And I can't even remember how I got into vibroacoustic therapy, what little thread got me here. But I was inspired to have this conversation with John Hill because we're both passionate about vibroacoustic therapy. He's been doing it for quite a bit longer than I have. It's a combination of sound and vibration frequencies, and it permeates every cell of your body. It's amazing. It's so beneficial for stress reduction and healing. Even my pets love it. My cat Otis, when he hears or senses the vibration, he comes and jumps up and he's got to lie on top of me. Everyone that I've had on my vibroacoustic mat so far has absolutely loved it. People just kind of go floating out. They say, oh my gosh, that was so amazing. That was wonderful. And there are quite a few different people that I could have chosen for this conversation, but John is so knowledgeable and he's so, what's the word I want to use? He really knows his subject and he's just a really nice person. And so I thought he would be a good person for this. So hi, John, how are you?
I'm fantastic, Janine. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm good. Welcome to my podcast. Now, I find when I'm listening to a podcast, I just want to get to the guest. I don't want to listen to the interviewer talk about them. So I'm going to let you share a little bit about your path of how you found vibroacoustic therapy, and then we'll go from there. Talk about the benefits.
Fantastic. And serendipity at its pinnacle, how I found it too. So my name's John Hill. I currently live in Pomona Park, Florida. I'm born and raised in New York.
If you can't tell by the accent.
If you can't tell by the accent, you can take the boy out of Brooklyn, but you can't take Brooklyn out of the boy. I've lived in Macon, Georgia, Raleigh, North Carolina, and Florida, and people still know I'm from Brooklyn.
Wow, you didn't pick up a Southern accent at all, huh?
No, I lived in Macon for 7 years and Raleigh for 7 years too. And I was servicing MRI machines then. So I went to college to study meteorology, ran out of tuition assistance, bounced around for a while, took a career aptitude test, actually took two of them, and they both pointed to I would be good at electronics and or this new burgeoning field of computer technology. This was like 1983 or something like that.
Mm-hmm, okay.
So I said, wow, that sounds cool. It sounded interesting to me. I was always kind of a tinkerer anyhow, taking things apart. I could take anything apart as a kid, but I often wouldn't put it back together correctly. although that changed after I became an MRI engineer. So I went to a vocational school and studied basic electronics, electricity, and computer technology in an 18-month program where I learned how electronics work, capacitors, resistors, inductors, printed circuits, electrical safety, magnetism, all that, and a computer programming and how computers work. The PC had just been invented. I think the IBM PC was out already or just about out. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. And I did it for 18 months and graduated with, you know, like an A. And they had a job fair, this vocational school on Long Island. And there were a bunch of tables there, Hewlett-Packard and Xerox and all these high-tech companies looking for entry-level technicians. And there was a booth and a sign in front of the booth said Phonar, F-O-N-A-R, Phonar. Never heard of it. Didn't know what it was. At that moment, nobody was at the table. I assumed they made some kind of new phone because bag phones, bag phones were a thing at that point, you know, carrying around. I thought I was the coolest thing in the world. I had a Radio Shack bag phone in a car and made a phone call from a car.
Mm-hmm.
So I went up to the table and started talking to the gentleman there. And he told me they were a small startup company in Melville, New York, that was building what was called an NMR machine, nuclear magnetic resonance. And I was like, what the heck is that? And we ended up in like a half hour conversation. Phonar was a company that had invented and was building the first MRI machine that was ever made. It was called
Wow.
NMR at the time. It was called nuclear magnetic resonance. The term MRI didn't come into common use until about 7 years later. I'll explain that real quick. So I loved it. He was interested in me. A week later, I went for an interview and I got hired by Phonar to be an entry level service guy on their new device they were building called a nuclear magnetic resonance machine, where no hospitals had them, no clinics had them. They didn't exist yet.
Wow, it's funny. It's so common now, huh?
It's so common now. And just in 1984, there were none of them.
Mm-hmm.
The concept of magnetic resonance had been known since the 40s, that this phenomenon, and I'll talk about that if we need to at some point, of magnetic resonance, that the body could be using magnetism and radio waves, they could induce the body to give off a signal that would show anatomy and metabolistic type information, both functional stuff as opposed to just anatomical, like x-rays and CTs just show density and anatomy. MRI shows anatomy even better than CT, but also shows functioning, how blood flows and which tissues are active and which enzymes are flowing and all kinds of other things.
Okay. See, I guess because I graduated from nursing school in 1980, no wonder I didn't really know about MRIs, right?
Yes, you did not. And for the first time, they were able to determine like the functioning of that liver, the functioning of that pancreas, without having to physically go in there and do a biopsy or do some invasive surgery. They can manipulate the magnet in the RF and get it to change the contrast of the image if it was diseased, where it wouldn't change the contrast of the image if it wasn't. So that was how MR was developed. And the president of Phonar had a patent on that technology. We all thought we were like Apple at the time, which wasn't really that big yet. And we were all going to get rich because he had a patent, and we won a lawsuit against Johnson & Johnson from Technicare. Because they were also building an MRI machine. But long story short, that trial was won by Phonar. We all thought we were going to get rich. And the federal judge 3 days later overturned the verdict because the Phonar patent was specific on using magnetic resonance to detect cancer in human tissue. And it truly does. The real breakthrough that MRI became an imaging modality was that you could biopsy a tumor and know whether it was malignant or benign without doing any invasive thing. You lay in the machine, I take one scan, it turns up black. I take another scan, if it stays black, it's benign. If it lights up on the second scan, it's cancerous. So you avoided invasive biopsies and could tell people's diseases just by manipulation of the hydrogen and the RF. And that was because cancerous tissue has a different magnetic response than healthy tissue does. And you can use that to your advantage and manipulate the contrast in an image so you can detect those things.
Ah, cool. Well, that's an education. Okay, yeah, so now let's get into how you...
So I did MR service. I left Phonar after 7 years and I went to GE Healthcare. They were by that time, the term MRI had become commonplace. And that was changed because people kept mistaking nuclear magnetic resonance for some kind of radioactive activity, like nuclear medicine uses radioactive isotopes and CAT scans use ionizing X-rays. So the term nuclear scared people. So they changed it to magnetic resonance imaging because the nuclear in NMR was just referring to the fact that we're imaging the nucleus of the hydrogen atom. That's the thing that spins and resonates. Also real quick, at 11 years old, my oldest sister was into 70s music, and music in general, popular music, became one of the most important things in my entire life from 11 years on right up to this day. Listening to, learning to play, I dabble in guitar. I'm not good at it at all, but going to concerts and listening to music and everything about music has always been the single most important thing in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I found MRI and kind of the resonance in MRI is kind of a musical machine, how MRI works and the sounds it makes and how it's what resonance really is. And we'll talk about that hopefully, because basically that term is thrown around a lot and it's really incorrectly what resonance means and what resonant frequency means.
Okay.
So long story, I moved around the country. I ended up retiring from GE and moving to Daytona Beach, Florida area with my wife. And a couple of months after I moved there, a friend of mine who currently still works for GE, a mutual acquaintance of his knows the director of a hospital called St. John's Recovery Place in Crescent City, Florida. And he had told me about these musical tables they had at one point. They sounded interesting. He knew I was a music crazy nut. So I had looked up, I think I did a little research on him at that time, but kind of forgot about it. And like 6 weeks later, he called me back again and said, remember those tables I told you about? Well, my friend told me one of them is broken and it's not functioning. And he asked me if I knew somehow that if my friend could go see it. He goes, dude, I live in North Carolina. I can't go to Florida. He said, my friend John just retired. He lives in Daytona. They looked on a map. It was an hour away from where I lived. They gave me her number. I called the director. I came up 2 days later. There it was, a sound lounge. St. John's Recovery Place owned two InHarmony sound lounges and had been using them for the time they were open. They had been open for less than a year, I think, or just about a year at that point. Mm-hmm. In fact, their tables say Holistic Health Sciences on them because that's what InHarmony used to be called. So mm-hmm. I went up there, met her. I took the table apart and she was in the room with me and we talked for basically, we ended up talking for hours. I fixed the table relatively quickly because I can fix an MRI machine. I can fix a sound table, which in the InHarmony Sound Lounge is really just a gigantic, comfortable subwoofer mm-hmm. With really state-of-the-art electronics and music and apps driving it. So then they had canceled their clients for that day. So then for like a couple of hours, me and this director, we talked for hours and I used the machine. I played with the sound lounge and basically, Janine, from the first time I hit play, I think I listened to Freebird by Lynyrd Skynyrd first. Might have been Pink Floyd, but either way, I was like, so I had always had the latest as an MR service engineer. I was making good money and I was an audiophile and a videophile and always had the latest, greatest high tech video and audio equipment before anybody ever heard about it. I had a 30-foot tall UHF antenna on my house in Suffolk County, Long Island, to get high def TV over the air before anybody had ever heard of it.
Oh, that's so funny. That sounds like something my dad would have had, because we had, you know, a weather station on top of the house. And
so anyway, so I instantly loved the table. We talked some more. I went home that day. And started researching in vibroacoustic therapy. And I would say either that night, I think it was the following morning, I bought an InHarmony sound lounge. Mm-hmm. Had to have one. Knew mm-hmm. I needed one because of all the different things in my entire life that musically had advanced from just 45 records on a portable turntable right up through Dolby Atmos with 7 channels and surround sound and 80-inch TVs. This was completely different in orders of magnitude to me. Mm-hmm, it was like, mm-hmm. Oh, I have to have one of these.
Now, just so our listening audience knows, there are times when it's appropriate where you don't have sound, you just have vibration, which you and I correct. Have taken Kate's certification course. I was just certified this week. Yay.
Without a doubt. And we'll talk about that too.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And she recommends mostly, especially for like specific things, like I am working with someone with Parkinson's. I use the, although she just, I don't know if you got it, but she just sent us a 30 plus 86 to try with Parkinson's.
I probably have that, but I use 30 hertz on Parkinson's clients a number of times, Janine, and the results are freaking remarkable. Stunning.
Yeah, what I've been doing is 30 and then after doing the 40 with the music.
And we can talk about the differences between a single sinusoidal frequency pulsing the table and listening to nothing, or mm-hmm. just having the conversation with the facilitator mm-hmm. or the bat tech, mm-hmm. or listening mm-hmm. to relaxing music while the table is vibrating to a single frequency for your condition, or listening to music that is the thing that's vibrating the table.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's three different ways to really use vibroacoustic therapy, and they're all better than each other and in a recursive way.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about that in a minute, because so you, before we started the recording, you were saying that in this next year, there's going to be an explosion of,
well, that's
of what I want to say, furniture. What,
devices that are using vibroacoustic therapy. Yeah.
Right. Right. So you have Sound Lounge, which is, it's like a lounge, right? It's curved. I have a mat, which I've been tweaking to get it just right. There's a meditation cushion. I'm getting a, it's called a sound pillow. He calls it a sound sandwich.
So, yeah, because he's going to be laying on a sound lounge with a pillow on his belly, holding
right.
It, right?
Yes, yes. Uh-huh.
Totally. So I have, indeed, I have an InHarmony sound lounge, which is a wave-shaped, super comfortable padded table that you lay on, ergonomically comfortable, that has four big transducers in it. Now, a transducer, I always tell clients, it has four 15-inch subwoofers in it. However, listen, basically the sound lounge is a giant subwoofer, but the subwoofer speakers do not, repeat, do not have the paper cones on them. And therefore, we refer to them as tactile transducers. But a tactile transducer is just the back half of any speaker.
Oh.
Speakers have a transducer in the back, and then they have a voice coil, and the transducer is really two parts. It's a strong permanent magnet, and then inside the magnet is a cylinder, usually a fiberglass, wrapped with a lot of copper wire called a coil, that two wires stick out the back where the speaker wire gets connected. So you have speaker wires going to a coil wrapped around a spool of thread sitting inside a strong permanent magnet. That thing together is called a transducer. Then on the front of the speaker is the paper cone that you see, that sometimes is made out of carbon, graphite, or whatever, but usually they're kind of a mesh paper.
Mm-hmm.
And that paper cone is connected directly to the voice coil. And another interesting point or a clarification, a subwoofer is just a speaker. It works no different than a mid-range or a tweeter. It's just physically larger because low frequency sound has the frequency of sound is inversely proportional to the wavelength. So low frequency sounds have large wavelengths.
Right.
Physically right. Large. If you could see sound in the air, the waves would be like a 40 hertz bass note. The sound waves are like 18 meters long.
Mm.
You know, that's 30, almost 40
wow.
feet.
Mm-hmm.
They're physically big, where a piano key that's much higher, they could be, it may be a tenth of a millimeter. So that they vary largely in size and in speed, but they all travel and propagate through the air at about the same speed.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if you're listening to a song and it's playing a song, and I came up and cut with a razor blade, say, cut the paper cone off the speaker.
Mm-hmm.
The transducer continues to play the same song, but
right.
Now it can't produce audio because there's no cone to push air. So it's only going, but it's playing Freebird. And so vibroacoustic therapy works by you lay or sit or hold or somehow touch or interact with a device that has transducers in it that are vibrating to the music that you're listening to through a pair of headphones that is playing the full spectrum music.
Oh, okay. I'm getting the idea now, because I also have, just as a little side note, I have a Patrick Flanagan Neurophone. And with that, there's two transducers. They're about maybe an inch in diameter. You place them above your eyebrows.
Yeah.
And you can hear this, even though the sound is not coming through your ears, it's coming through, it's through your bones, though. It's vibrating through your bones. And you can, it's really cool. It's supposed to clean off your pineal gland and also clear out, like, on the bones in the, I can't remember.
The pineal
now.
Gland crystallizes, and physical vibrations right. put near them will definitely kind of shatter that crystallization. Sound travels 10 to 20 times more efficiently through something like steel or concrete or water or anything other than air. Air is one of its most inefficient modes of transport. That's right. Why vibroacoustic therapy works so good, because you're taking the vibrations from sound and applying them directly to the body, because you can't really do it through the air because it dampens and disappears so fast. You would have to stand in front of everybody in their life has stood in front of a loud speaker at a club or something or at a concert. And you can physically feel the bass if you're really close.
Yeah.
But the music has to be extremely loud to feel that. And it drops off with an inverse square rule that a foot away, you won't feel it. Or 5 feet away, you don't feel anything.
With a device, whether it's a mat or a cushion, there's meditation cushion. I was thinking, you know, the meditation cushion, it sounds interesting, but I just can't sit up straight.
Have you ever tried an InHarmony cushion?
No.
Okay, so let me just jump in real quick. Lots of people, myself included, have difficulty sitting upright, and many can't sit in a lotus position at all.
Well, I can sit in a lotus position. It's that my head, as I start to, you know, get really into it, my neck snaps, my head snaps down.
You mean falls forward because you're like zoning out?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So
that's why I lie down. I lie down when I meditate.
There you go. Then that'll work. I was going to say, because the InHarmony cushion is patented, and how you sit in it, like your butt is like 14 inches higher than your feet. So you could be a 75-year-old out of shape person or a 20-year-old yoga instructor, and both of you find it equally comfortable. And yet, and you're in sort of like the, because it tilts you forward. The back of it is, it's angled forward, and your feet are lower than your butt. And it's really an amazingly easily comfortable position. And it's a position that's conducive to allowing meditation to happen. And that lotus position developed independently around the world because it just works, not because of any other reason. That they found it in Indonesia just like they found it in Europe, because when you sit in that position, your body's comfortable enough where that magical thing called meditation is more likely to happen.
Got it. And I know there are some people now that have clinics, they're getting 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of these meditation cushions and daisy chaining them and doing like group meditations, which I think that would be really cool.
Not only would be, I've been involved with some of them.
Ah.
Currently, my house right now is kind of set up as like a group meditation thing where we could, I have 5 separate vibroacoustic therapy devices in my house, and I have Sonos speakers in 9 Sonos speakers in around the house in every room. And I can get the chair, the sound lounge, the cushion, the Wooja vest, another chair that I'm working on, and every speaker in the house and every subwoofer in the house, all playing the same exact thing at the speed of light, synchronistically, perfectly, where the person on the sound lounge in one room, me sitting in the chair, everybody in the house is feeling the same thing. And the house itself,
the house vibrates. Would be vibrating, right? You are a true audiophile. You are a true audiophile. Oh, I'm sure the house is vibrating. It has to.
Yeah.
With all that. Oh my God. That is crazy.
And it doesn't have to be really loud. That's what's so amazing about it. You can control it and make the vibration strong and the music not so loud. And everybody has a more power. That's where the word resonance really comes into effect. When multiple things are doing the same thing at the same time, there's a seamless, effortless transfer of energy, which is what the term resonance really means. Resonance is a phenomenon that happens in our universe. When two things, and they don't have to be the same thing, they can be tapping on the ground in brainwaves, two things that get close enough to each other that can interact with each other and are vibrating at the same frequency, like literally identical, the same frequency, they will effortlessly and seamlessly do all kinds of magical things. And it's usually just the transfer of energy becomes resistance free.
That's kind of the crux of like when I'm working with the genius with people, it's finding that right frequency, right? Because all our organs have unique frequencies. I mean, everything on this planet has a unique frequency. So if you can, and this is what Rife was all about, right? So is finding that the correct frequency that can bring something into balance, or if it's like a cancer cell or a tumor or something, or destroy it. But that's kind of the key, is finding that right frequency.
Well, I would say yes and no about that. There's no specific frequency. There's no such thing as a magic frequency or frequencies that heal DNA or cure cancer. It's ranges of frequencies. It's kind of like music. Or it's more like color. Like there's shades of color. Like if you're going to paint a nursery, you paint it in a pastel type thing, and it doesn't really matter whether you use sage green from Valspar or plantation green from Behr. As long as you keep it in that kind of area, it's going to have that kind of mood. Music and frequencies are the same kind of thing, and that's kind of what I wanted to talk about, resonant frequencies and frequencies, maybe
Go
its
ahead.
own podcast. But the resonant free like a tuning fork has a single resonant frequency. But if you hold a tuning fork, it's not vibrating at the frequency that's a 440 hertz tuning fork. You just bought it on Amazon. It's not vibrating at 440 hertz until you bang it. It's called perturbation with a P. You have to disturb it. And then after the perturbation stops, what does the thing you just perturbated do? What it does is it will respond at its resonant frequency. It's the after effect of being disturbed by something. What does it do after that? So when I pluck a string on a guitar, like a tuned guitar, the low E string, it's tuned to an E, that's 81 hertz or something. When I pluck that, while I'm plucking it, I could pluck it at 100 hertz. And while I'm plucking it, it's going 100 hertz. As soon as I stop, that string will go back to 81 hertz because that's the only thing it can vibrate at when it's not being disturbed. And it'll shake at 81 hertz until it stops. So the resonant frequency of that string is 81 hertz. I can drop that guitar on the floor and that string will only shake at 81 hertz. So you're familiar with the concept of an opera singer or a singer breaking a wine glass. Most people are. So that's mechanical and acoustical resonance that happens. So as quickly as I can, picture three glasses, a small, medium, and large wine glass. And if you take a fork or a butter knife and you tap the little one, it goes ting, and the middle one goes tong, and the larger one goes tong. They make three different sounds. The little one will make a high-pitched sound, then a medium sound, then a low-pitched sound. And no matter what you use to hit that wine glass, now, a wine glass is made out of one structure. It's glass. The whole thing is glass. The human body is made out of hundreds of structures and has hundreds of different resonance frequencies. So the buildings. So the three wine glasses. So if I start singing a note or playing a note, say that. So if I hit the three wine glasses and I use an app and I measure what note those wine glasses make when I stop banging them, 500 hertz, 400 hertz, and 300 hertz. Those are the three sounds they make. So if I start playing music in that room, and I play music, say, at 300 hertz, everything in the room will vibrate at 300 hertz. But the glass that's the 500 hertz glass will respond at 500 hertz. The glass that's the 100 hertz will respond at 100 hertz. But the glass that's 300 hertz will respond at the same frequency it's being perturbed at. That's where that glass will break because all the energy of my sound wave is matching the response of the glass. It's like pushing somebody on a swing. If you time how you push them, you can push them right over the top of the swing because you're adding energy at the exact same time in the cycle. And that's what resonance really is. You have to match the frequency. The other glasses don't break, they just vibrate at their frequency. If I up the tone to 500 hertz, now the big glass will break and the other two won't.
Got
And
it.
that's what
Okay.
resonance is. When you hear something in your house rattling in the room, everything in that room is shaking at the same frequency, but one of them is resonating. it's shaking at the same frequency it's being disturbed at. So it's getting energy in and starting to shake. And if it's a glass, it'll break.
Got it. Okay. Interesting. Okay. I didn't
know
that.
It really is, because you can look at a cityscape after an earthquake, and often you will see all of the same type of construction buildings fell where all of the other types of buildings didn't, or vice versa. Mm-hmm. And it had to do with the ground was shaking at 11 hertz during that earthquake. If the building's resonant frequency, and it's like, say, a tower that was like the World Trade Center or something, where it's the same type of construction the whole way, if that resonant frequency is 11 hertz, that building's going to fall.
Got it.
Because it's, yeah, and that's why soldiers don't march across bridges in lockstep, because they can collapse.
Mm-hmm. Right. I remember that. Interesting. Yep. Okay. Totally. So, wow. Of course, we could go on forever, but let's get back to vibroacoustic therapy. So one of the things I wanted to ask first is, so if the device has the ability to produce sound and vibration, does it have transducers and speakers in it?
Well, some do and some don't. If it's going to produce sound, it has to have speakers.
Okay, that's what I wanted
usually,
to know. Yeah.
Right, usually. So what, either headphones or external speakers in the room, or in Harmony's new sound lounge has speakers built into the top of the sound lounge, so you don't have to use headphones. You can just listen to the music coming out of the sound lounge.
Right, and the mat does too.
And the mat, right, the new mat does too, correct.
You helped me figure out how to set it up so that I could have the sound going through the mat and through the headphones at the same time.
Correct. And there's pros and cons to both, and not really any cons. Sometimes I listen to vibroacoustic therapy where I have loud, big music in the room, so it feels larger and fuller. And other times it's more nuanced, and I have headphones on. Mm-hmm. And the table is still doing the same thing in both of those cases, but the immersive sound experience is different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now, why would somebody want to experience vibroacoustic therapy? What are the benefits? What kinds of things? Now, I know since you're working in this clinic, you're lucky. You don't have to look for clients. You've got a ready group.
So yeah, real quick, let me throw in that. So a week after I ordered my sound lounge, I spoke to the woman who ran the place, and one thing led to another, and I started working there like a week after that, and that was more than 4 years ago. So I've been a vibroacoustic therapy practitioner, and I now call myself a vibroacoustic specialist at that hospital for 4 years now, and I've done, 5,000 cases at least. So why would somebody use it? Because it's the most relaxing thing most people have ever done, or certainly have done in a long, long time.
It's not unusual to fall asleep, which is that's a key. If you fall asleep, you got to be relaxed, right?
Without a doubt. And there are certain tracks in music that if somebody needs to sleep, I could almost guarantee I can put you to sleep with a bat table. Mm-hmm. But it's more like the first time a client once said to me after their first experience, I said, so ha-ha. Like Craig mentioned today on Telegram, how was that? And she said, I feel exhilaratingly relaxed. And
ooh,
I was like, that's almost an oxymoron. Yeah, it's almost an oxymoron. But right. I said, it's exactly how I feel when I do it. Exhilarate. She goes, I'm a wet noodle like I haven't felt in years, but my mind is on fire in a way that's serene and comforting, but alive in a different way, exhilaratingly.
Let me give you an example. I had one person who she got up off the table and she was like, oh my God, I feel so good. And I later found out it was her inspiration to start a new business. So it was the same
kind
of thing.
It happens all the time. Now I work in a rehab hospital that often their session, a client session with me, is the turning point where they start getting hopeful and finish the program. Or what happens a lot, Janine, is the therapist that has been seeing this person two or three times will come to me and say, what did you do with Charlie? I was like, I put him on the table and talked to him like a friend. He's like, he's a different person. So that's been going on for 4 years. And now we have a pretty strong team there. And one of the therapist at St. John's owns his own sound lounge, unbeknownst to me when he came there. So there's a lot of stuff happening with vibroacoustic therapy at St. John's. So relaxation is certainly one of the most amazing things. It lowers blood pressure. It increases circulation. It causes euphoria. And I would say almost every client. And joyfulness in a way, really depends on kind of how you facilitate it too. But basically everybody, not everybody, now I'm going to use some exaggerations, but way more than 95% of the clients that walk out of my vat room at St. John's are smiling, laughing, high-fiving me, hugging me, and you used the term before, floating down the hall, talking to each other like, what the hell just happened? And it's kind of amazing. And it's like, well, we'll leave it there for there. So I've been doing this. Yeah, and you're right. I get clients fed to me because I'm an employee of St. John's and they own their tables. I own my own stuff at home too. So I don't have to market for clients yet. I do sessions at home and I plan on expanding and I have my tentacles and all kinds of things these days, vibroacoustic wise, because basically it's universally liked. There's nothing like that 100% of the people like and want. And if they introduce to their lives, and I know 50 people who personally now who introduced this to their lives and their lives got better. Their kids like it. Their relationships are better. They feel life is better. Their chores are now just the ticket price to life. And it kind of makes things easier. And it works kind of because we're human. It works on animals. It works pretty much on all living mammals that I'm aware of. They use it a lot in animal rescues to calm animals down that won't let humans help them, that are there to help, but they've been abused by humans their whole life. You lay a vibroacoustic therapy blanket on an abused horse that won't let people near them. And Janine, I've seen a video where like in 5 seconds, the horse just says, okay, you can help. And lets you help them because it's an interaction that like all living things feel. And it's like, that feels comforting and easing. And it starts, basically it resets your autonomic nervous system from sympathetic to parasympathetic, whether you want to or not.
And for people who don't know, just the quick, sympathetic is fight or flight. Parasympathetic is called rest and digest. So that's that's where, you know, that's where you're relaxed, you feel good. Also, I don't forget where I got this information. I don't think it was from you, but that 40 hertz, if you play that for just a few minutes around your plants, that it's very beneficial for them as far as fruiting and growing and, you know, health of the plant.
I don't doubt that. I'm not aware of that study, but I wouldn't doubt it because it's a physical thing that they feel. That's physically doing things to the plant. Basically, for the same reason that babies fall asleep in car seats is why every client sits on. I always have my tables on and running at 40 hertz before the clients walk in. And then they sit on the table and I'm on a rolling stool, so I'm not standing up. And instantly they're like, oh, this feels good. It's like, yeah, I know, doesn't it? And like in a minute, we're friends.
When we describe what we're doing, that it's relaxing the body so that the body can then heal itself. But I know that people use this for everything from anxiety to dementia, Alzheimer's, everything in between. I've seen one of the nice things about Kate's certification class is she gives us tons of studies that have been done for just about everything you can think of.
Basically, just about everything you can think of. And she's a purist, and I took her class too, and it's thorough, and it's all accurate, and I have it printed out in a binder, and I carry it with me.
Me too.
I refer to it also. I don't use her files near as much as I use the InHarmony app. Although I use her files on every client to start, and I use them specifically on clients that have known ailments, but I'm trying to get clients really to learn to meditate. That is by far, in my empirical studies, and it's thousands of people, the only thing that I've ever seen put people into meditative states who've never been there. Me being one of them, and I see that at least weekly.
Okay, John, what's your definition of meditation?
Well, now since it's when you are daydreaming, really, when you're awake and not aware of time, you don't hear your surroundings, you lose track of time, like sleep. To me, meditation is best as an analogous to sleep. It's not something you do, it's something that happens. You can't force yourself to fall asleep. You can increase the likelihood of it happening by shutting off the light and opening the window and putting on the sound machine, shutting off the fan, whatever, fluff your pillow, and then wait for that elusive thing called sleep to happen. And if it happens, because it doesn't sometimes, if it happens, you won't remember the transition later. And if you wake up 20 minutes later or 3 hours later, if it's pitch black and there's no clock, you have no idea if it was 20 minutes or 3 hours. Meditation is the same thing. It happens where you just zone out and lose track of time. And let me tell you real quick. So at St. John's, often I will run a 3-minute thing and I'll talk to the client. Then I'll run a 6-minute demo and I'll talk to the client. And then I'll run an 11-minute third eye chakra track. And then when it's over, now they still have the headphones on, but the music is stopped, the table is stopped, and I know they can hear me because I've had conversations with them between the first two tracks with the headphones on. So I'll say like, hey, Mary, how was that? Nothing. She does not hear me. Mary, how was that? Nothing. So I've learned the hard way that she may be sound asleep. Sometimes you can tell because somebody's snoring and or their breathing changed and you're pretty sure they are asleep. Right. I've also learned at St. John's that many people snore when they're not sleeping, but thoroughly relaxed.
Oh,
I get that a lot where I think somebody's asleep because they're snoring. And then I start saying something to the other client, like Charlie's asleep. And he's like, no, I'm not. I was like, you're snoring like a truck driver.
I figured when they're snoring, they're asleep. Oh, interesting.
No, it's really a relaxation thing. And it's like, yeah, when I get totally relaxed, I snore even awake. So now she's not answering me. So I've learned the hard way. So I don't know if she's in a meditative state or sleeping. They look identical to me. So if she's sleeping, I have to like shake her relatively hard. And I even show this to clients ahead of time sometimes. Like, hold their shoulder and shake them. And some people you have to shake pretty hard to wake up if they're asleep. However, if they're in a meditative state and I do that, it's going to scare the crap out of them.
I know. That's why I'm never sure what to do.
Well, I'll tell you what to do.
Okay, great.
You take your pinky. You take just your pinky and you touch an exposed area of skin. I usually use their hand or their arm. And almost instantly, Jeanine, as soon as I've said, Mary, nothing. Then I take my pinky, I touch her hand. She's like, huh, what? Huh? She wakes up instantly.
Oh,
as soon as I touch her skin, she wakes up because she's not asleep. That's why she wakes. She comes to, really. She comes out of that meditative state instantly. It takes her a second or two to realize, oh, hi, John. And I'm like, how was that? She's like, wow, that was amazing. And I was like, it's over? And then they'll often say it's over. And I'm like, yep. It was like a 24 minute clarity. And she was like, I was like 20 minutes. I was like, yep. And I swear often I showed the client my watch. Look, it's 3:30, Mary. I was 24 minutes. And then it hits them that for the first time in their life, which happened to me when I first meditated on a sound lounge, and I thought I was a meditator before that, that they have lost track of time for the first time in their life. And it wasn't sleep.
Wow.
And I'm like, welcome to meditation, because you were wide awake, yet you didn't hear me, and you lost 20 minutes. 20 minutes is gone from your life, and you weren't sleeping. To me, that's meditation. And until that happens, you have training wheels on. And that happens for people on the sound lounge because it gets you out of your own head, dissolves your ego, and it allows willingness and that I can't meditate thing go away.
Right.
And then the physiological effect of the vibrations causing the cascades of chemicals in your body to relax you to a point that you haven't been before, that it happens. And the music that InHarmony curates behind that, there's a lot of thought and work that goes into not, I mean, the vibrations from the music are important, but vibrations from music go together just like notes in chords and chords in keys. They're musically driven, and they match and they harmonize based on what frequencies they are relative to each other, not what exact frequency they are, what they are relative to each other. Things harmonize. Humans hear, humans decide if something sounds pleasurable based on the thing they just previously heard. The world and the universe is analog, and we use digital things called language and mathematics to better describe it. But what's happening is infinite and smooth and analog and really not discrete until you're way down to the quantum level. And that's not how humans experience the pleasure of vibroacoustic therapy. It's at the macro level when the machine is on and you feel it. That's when it starts working.
Interesting.
Yeah, totally. I call it my magical, mystery, musical, meditative, massaging mood machine. Because really, that's a lot of M's. Magical, mystery, musical, meditative, massaging mood machine. Because it does all of those things like every time. I've never owned a piece of technology in my life that 4 years later, I love it more, use it more, and it continues to get better.
So John,
I can't think of anything.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. So for meditation, are there certain frequencies that you found work best to get people into a meditative state?
Absolutely not. Because first of all, almost all meditation, you go to YouTube and pull up any meditation, what you hear in the headphones is music. Now it may say tune to 528 hertz, tune to 174 hertz. And we could, that's another whole podcast, how they do that. But what you're hearing while the guy's talking, most people use guided meditations to try and meditate. And basically, it doesn't happen because you're listening to a story. You're paying attention to a story. But people do that so they can sit through it for 20 minutes because just music, usually people who don't know how to meditate or haven't, they won't even sit there for 10 minutes. They're like, this isn't working. And then they'll take it off. So they will listen to a story for 10 or 15 or 20 minutes, but they still won't go into a meditative state because they're paying attention to the story. So no single sinusoidal frequency that I'm aware of from Kate's course or anywhere else aids in meditation. It's broadband music. Every track in the InHarmony app and every track on YouTube plays music, which is an infinite range of frequencies all the way from 0 to 20,000 hertz. And basically what it is the composer of the music and the type of music it is and how soothing you as the listener feel about it is whether it's going to cause you to go into a meditative state. And that's different for everybody. And what happens a lot, and I know this just from experience, that when a client comes in and says, I want this particular music, I listen to it at home on YouTube all the time. I want this 969 hertz. And I'll pull up on YouTube that exact file that she wants. And then I'll see some of the other things. What she really likes is that composer, his music and his style of music and all of his tracks, his 174, his 528, his 969, his all of them. She loves all of them because it's like, she likes that band. His music works for her. So basically, any of the tracks will cause her to meditate. And then he'll write specific tracks. Like as a composer, what really comes through with vibroacoustic therapy is the intention of the composer. When you're writing a sad song, the composer and the people playing the music are feeling sad when they're playing it. They wrote the song. They're thinking of the lyrics. When you're playing I'm Walking on Sunshine by Katrina and the Waves, it's a completely different feeling. But those things translate through music into the listener when it's immersive, and it has this amazing effect. I tell people music is like the Mentos of to the Diet Coke of your groove. You play the right song to the right person, and instantly they come alive in a way that they haven't felt in 25 years. And it doesn't go away. And it's remarkable in what it does. And I do this at St. John's and elsewhere. And the effect is ongoing and cumulative.
Well, that's an important point. And I know there are, what's that one? It's like a device that you place in your chair that has, I'm not sure if it has transducers or just speakers, that VT2000 or whatever it
oh,
is.
Oh yeah, that's a vibracruiser. Like, so I think I mentioned this. So I'm sitting right now in a leather reclining, powered reclining chair that I have four transducers in. That's a vibroacoustic therapy reclining chair. I'm in it as we speak, and it's vibrating at 40 hertz. I built that myself because I'm an engineer and I love vibroacoustic therapy, and I couldn't find one to buy, so I made one.
Good for you.
And yeah, and it works as good as any other vibroacoustic therapy device if you build it correctly, and I did. Mm-hmm. And it's just my favorite thing I've ever owned in my life. Other than the sound lounge is more like an experiential thing that when I have an intention and I want to do an hour-long thing and I'm looking for some outcome, I use my sound lounge. But when I'm reading emails and I'm answering things, I'm watching a hockey game tonight or doing anything that you can do more conducively in a chair, my chair is on at 40 hertz.
So
period.
Right now, as you're speaking to all of us, you are vibrating at 40 hertz.
Correct. But I have a transducer in the footrest of this chair, one right under my butt, one behind my back, and one in the headrest. And it's being driven by an InHarmony Sound Lounge 2 amplifier.
Got it.
And so I play InHarmony tracks through this and Kate's classes and regular popular music all the time. And it's completely changed my life and taught me a mindfulness. It teaches you mindfulness. Do you know, like, I would say 100% of the people, if you stop them on the street, certainly everybody at St. John's, and especially in our community, when you ask them what mindfulness is, they all say they know exactly what it is. I'm like, yeah, but you're not doing it. We all know what it is, but none of us are doing it. So intellectually, we all know it's always now, yet we're always living in the future and regretting the past and missing now. Mm-hmm. And to me, the present is ever stationary. So the present is stationary. It's never then, it's never when, it's always now. Enjoy, learn how. So you can intellectually know from the moment you're born to the moment you die, it's always now. It's never anything but now. Yet we spend the majority, not we, most people spend the majority, a good portion of their life, not now, worried about the future and regretting the past and giving up the only thing they ever have is the moment you're currently in. And the vibroacoustic therapy kind of dissolves that part of your ego away and lets you connect to that, where you start learning to stay in it when you're not on the table. And then you start living mindfully in anything you're doing. Waiting for a bus, online at DMV, it doesn't matter. If you do that mindfully, it's better. And regret and worry are full mind, body, and spirit conditions. And I'm 100% positive now. The human brain can't be mindful. And I don't like that word either, because that's been commandeered and bastardized. And it means a million things to a million different people. I call it A&E, like the television program, but it stands for aware and engaged. If you're aware of now and engage in something you find interesting, which there always is if you open up your mind, regret and worry can't happen. They disappear instantly because it requires attention. And when your attention is on what you're doing, you can't worry and regret. And then you start realizing, I've been spending most of my time in worry and regret, and all of this energy and time comes back to you and your days get wider. And it doesn't matter how long your days are. It matters how wide they are. And that just kind of opens that up the more you use it.
You know, I think that's one of the most important things that we've covered in this conversation, is the idea
the widening of your days.
Mindfulness, the whole idea of mindfulness and how.
Alan Watts says, you know, basically, he's one of my favorite philosophers.
I love
that guy. But basically, the universe is basically playful. And he says, and I had said this years ago too, I'm more like myself now, Janine, in my 60s, like I was when I was 25. I don't feel I'm in an older car now, but I feel like I did when I was 25. But I don't even mean that as far as the youthfulness, I mean, as far as the mindfulness and the ability to feel joy and happiness isn't something that only kids and young people have. It gets suppressed by Western society as we get older. And then when you finally learn, oh, I can still be young and happy and joyful, then you start doing it and all kinds of wonderful things happen. And all these people you admire start liking you when you realize half the facade you've been putting on your whole life is to try and get people to like you anyhow, and you become your authentic self and they like you way more anyhow. And all of that energy comes back to you to share as love and feel good about whatever it is you're doing. And then you share it and it's contagious. And that's what resonance is. As more people, like when five people are on a cushion and they're all feeling the same thing, it's like the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. When trained voices sing, the resonance makes it louder than the sum of the five people together. It's amplification without electricity. A trained choir can be heard 50 miles away if there's enough people, where the same 50 people, if they weren't trained, 200 yards away, you wouldn't hear them.
Right.
Because all the noise would cancel itself out.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, just the idea of being happier, more authentic, you know, as we get older. I mean, you know, I think for pretty much everyone, you know, these last 4 or 5 years have been really, really tough, very stressful. And
the answer to that is to be mindful and check out, like, mindfulness of now doesn't mean not planning for the future. It's like I tell clients all the time, if you're planning for a trip to Hawaii, you're doing that presently. Now you're online picking out the rental car and the room you want on the cruise ship, and you're mindfully doing that. As soon as you stop, you're one of these people who are afraid to fly, like me. I don't really like flying. And now you're going to worry for 8 months about the plane trip you have to take on that vacation. That's not a good thing. And so many of us do things like that. Oh, I have this big thing happening in August. It's like, yeah, but it's February and you're missing today. We're at a concert and you're worried about something that's going to happen in August. And there's a book by James Clear called Atomic Habits. And if you start like kind of doing simple little things that make this experience of letting little things bring joy into your day. There's another book by Ingrid Fattel-Lee called Joyful, The Extraordinary Power of Ordinary Things to Cause Extraordinary Happiness. It's the little things in life that happen 10,000 times a day that have the most impact on the weight of your life. At the end of your life, when you're the scale is, did I have a fulfilling life or not? It's not going to be, I went to Hawaii twice or I did this. It's going to be, how were the other 32,000 days of your life? Those are the ones that matter.
Yeah,
they
that's
weigh
a good point.
Way, way more. And true mindfulness makes every day a great day. And everything you do, when you do it the way you want, when you fix your coffee in the morning and you go to your favorite spot to watch that sunset's going to be as beautiful as every other time you went there. So mindfully, that's the best sunset you've ever seen in your life. And it really is, because you went to that place specifically because you love the sunsets there. I'm writing a blog now that I've been working on for a year called The Best Slice of Pizza I Ever Had in My Life. And it's, but really, that's the name of the blog. It's something me and my mom, God rest her soul, I'm the man I am today because of my parents and my mom. But I remember talking to her about eating pizza when I was a young junior high school student walking home from school. I would get out early on Wednesdays and I would stop at this mom and pop pizza place and order the lunch special for junior high, two slices and a soda, and get the Long Island newspaper, flip it over to the sports section and read about the Yankees and the Mets and the Giants and the Jets and the Rangers and the Islanders and the Knicks and the Nets. And for that half hour, I didn't know it then. I remember talking to my mom. I was in pure heaven. Heaven on earth, that was pure mindful. Nothing else mattered. Homework, life, the fight, I had nothing. And I loved that pizza. And it was from that particular pizza parlor. And then really, now I realize when I go to Luigi's and have a slice of pizza for that 20 minutes, it's like John at 14 at the Grand Ball Pizzeria at Baldwin High School. as good as anything. And then you realize, oh my goodness, I do 100 things a day that I love, that if I engage with them, they're as good as any other time I've ever done them. And then your day is great. How was your day, John? Fantastic. What did you do? Went to work and came home. Oh, why was it great? Because I had lunch and I played some music and I met some interesting people and I found a new shortcut, and you start thinking differently. And all your other problems in life, this is what I say to every client. And here's kind of maybe an end. I don't know how long we've been talking.
No,
about
I think this is a good way to end.
So yeah, the clients come in, and so I work in a hospital. Half the people in there are not there for substance abuse. They're there for anxiety or depression or PTSD. And some of them may be drinking too much too, but it doesn't even matter. Their life is in an upheaval, and they're not in the best part. And sometimes they're grumpy and angry and whatever. But an hour later, when they're crying and or hugging, laughing me, and we're all having a piece of chocolate, I always end with a piece of chocolate. And it becomes, it's a Hershey's miniature, and they have a choice of a crackle, a Mr. Good Bar, a dark chocolate, or a regular Hershey's. But I know you're laughing, and so are they. And I will say, so look at this Hershey's miniature. You've had 1,000 of these in your life. You know how good it's going to be. It's going to be spectacular, like every one. So they're all tied for first. That's another blog called Tied for First. My blog is called The Best Slice of Pizza I Ever Had in My Life, in parentheses, Tied for First. So every Hershey bar you ever have is tied for first. So how do you break the tie? Like in hockey, it's head to head. You know, it's who had the most wins in the conference or the division or head to head competition. Well, in Hershey bars, it's the one that's in your mouth right now. That's the one that wins. It's the sunset you're looking at now. It's the song you're listening to now. It's the thing you're doing now that wins. And then you start realizing every day is freaking amazing. If you look at the amazing parts and don't concentrate on the 12 things that suck today, concentrate on the 88 that were amazing. And the scale starts tipping. And then the 12 that were negative start to, like, you don't even notice them. Like, you can cut the lawn mindfully with headphones on, listening to your favorite song, and it's not cutting the lawn anymore. It's listening to music. It sounds kind of, but that's kind of, that doesn't mean I love to cut my lawn. It means you mitigate things that you don't like and you enhance things that you do, and life gets better. And so here's the end. So as we're hugging, those people are leaving. I'm like, Mary and Sophia, nothing in your outside life, your financial, your relationship, your legal problems, nothing is different. Yet look at you. You're a completely different person right now. You're laughing and giggling and hugging and loving chocolate. We're high-fiving each other. You jumped up and down in front of me. See, you can feel that way despite those things. Unlatch how you feel from the circumstances of your life, or you'll be playing whack-a-mole forever. Be like a buoy, anchor yourself to the ocean, and then it doesn't matter how rough the water gets. You know how to be joyful. And then it just goes from there and explodes in a million other ways.
Nice. Thank you, John. I really, I think the way you wrapped this up is it's super important for everyone to hear. I'll say it, especially for myself, because I do a lot of research on the things that are going on in the world. And I do try to compartmentalize and, you know, I don't focus on it all the time. I just try to educate myself. But still, it's like, you know, wow, it can get depressing, so, you know. And there are a lot of things in my life that are great, you know. So,
And when it becomes a habit, it's like you don't, and these habits happen quick, like in 3 days or a week. And now you're not consciously saying, don't think about the news right now, Janine. You're doing something, you're making dinner, or you're doing something for something else, and you can't think about it because you're doing it mindfully. It doesn't even occur to you to not think of it because you can't. And real quick, you've heard of stacking. Basically, any other modality that is done on top of that seems to go up substantially. At St. John's, we do EMDR, eye movement, and, you know, desensitizer retraining. So we've been doing that for 4 years. Now that I've been there for 4 years and the new group of therapists are really into sound therapy also, we're noticing a significant change. And check this out, EMDR sessions done right after a VAT session are way more powerful, yet recursively, VAT sessions done right after an EMDR session are more powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And
interesting.
We're documenting that and working mm-hmm. on some other things. And we want to get these into more hospitals because it's literally the favorite thing the clients do there. When I walk into work, Janine, they see me, they're like, am I on your list today? It's like they want to do it. But all of the other things in the treatment start working better because yeah. they love this other thing too. You know, it's kind of yeah. like it's a full ticket, but it's the willingness. Willingness is the component that makes everything easier. If you're willing, so a lot of people don't even want to try meditation. So I'll right. play some Pink Floyd for them for a while until we become friends. And then the second or third sessions, he's willing. He's like, let's try one of those meditation things, John. Mm-hmm. Now I know he's willingly wanting to try mm-hmm. it, and it's going to work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
I will say, I will say that since I've been, I use mine every day, sometimes twice a day. And I will say I've noticed I'm more cheerful when I wake up in the morning instead of like, another day. Although my dogs do help because they jump on me and they make me laugh. But I do find that I'm waking up more cheerful. I'm just generally more cheerful during the day.
In Boston, in hockey, I can't wait to watch that game. I'm going to be mindfully watching a hockey game tonight like crazy. It's a game 7 and there's 3 games tomorrow. And the Rangers, I'm from New York and I lived in Raleigh. The Rangers, New York Rangers and the Carolina Hurricanes start the second round tomorrow. And nothing better than playoff hockey.
You're not following the Yankees?
Well, it's baseball season, not when the NHL playoffs are going on. No,
Okay. Wow. Well,
so thank you so much, Janine.
Thank you. And to my listening audience, I hope you've enjoyed this. John filtered in sort of subtly a lot of really good nuggets of information that, that can help all of us. And I will put links in, I'm going to post this on YouTube since it's, we'll say, not controversial, and on Rumble. And of course you can go to realjanine.com, realjanean.com. That's the podcast website. And in the show notes, I will post links for, 3 or 4 different companies that have vibroacoustic therapy devices that I found that have some really cool things.
And perhaps you could post the link to St. John's Recovery Place, and I'll send it to you,
okay,
Janine, the link
sure.
to the vibroacoustic therapy page that I wrote for St. John's.
Oh, great. Awesome. Awesome. I'd like to.
And a lot of clients come there specifically because of the vibroacoustic therapy that's offered there and nowhere else that I'm aware of.
Cool. Okay. And you're in, where are you? You're in Pomona, Florida?
I live in Pomona Park, but the hospital is in Crescent City, Florida, which is only 6 miles from where I live.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Which coast are you on, the west or the east?
No, I'm in Florida. I'm on the east coast.
I know. I mean, you know, Florida.
Oh, no, I'm right in the center. Oh,
right
in the center of Florida.
Okay.
In the middle.
Okay. Kind of like Disney, right in the center. Okay.
Yeah, definitely. I'm an hour southwest of Jacksonville and an hour north of Orlando.
Oh, okay. That gives me, now I got it. Okay. Great. Well, because a lot of people are moving to Florida. So, do share all of that. And, please, everyone, if you found that this was valuable, please share it. And I will be doing more podcast conversations. I'm just not going to stick to a schedule as I find people that I feel inspired that I would like to talk to and that I feel like the listening audience would enjoy, then I will keep recording. So thank you, everyone. Take care. And until next time, be well.